First, we called the workers. And each worker came up and he told his lie. And they said, Rebbe Shmuel, the owner of the Mashke factory, he made us drill a hole in the pipes. And he told us that every day we have to fill up a bottle of Mashke and bring it to him, that he should be able to take it home and have it. And we asked him, why should we do that? You have a Mashke factory full of bottles of Mashke. And he says, because I want it for myself without having to pay the tax to the government. And everybody said, boo, Reb Shmuel is doing something against the king. Of course, Reb Shmuel had to keep quiet because you can't speak out of turn. You have to wait till it's your turn to go up there to speak. But he knows it's a lie. And the other worker gets up there and says the same thing. And the judge says, and why did you do it? If you know it's wrong. And the worker says, because he said if we wouldn't listen to him, he would fire us. Then we wouldn't have a job and we wouldn't make money for our wives and our children. And the whole courtroom says, boo for Reb Shmuel that he makes the workers do such a thing. Ugh. And Reb Shmuel knows it's a lie. And the judge is listening to every word. And then they called up other workers who also told lies. Yeah, we heard Reb Shmuel tell the workers to do that. Oh yeah, we heard this and we heard that. Because the other workers had made their friends to also tell lies. Until everyone had gone up to the front and said what he had to say. And now it was Reb Shmuel's turn that he has to go sit in the chair in front of the judge and he has to tell what he has to tell. And as soon as he stood up to come, everyone started screaming and booing. And Reb Shmuel was only thinking one thing, please Hashem help. It seems to me it's impossible. The judge looked so serious, even mean. And all the workers said such lies. And if I'm only one person and the workers are not going to speak for me, so what can I do? What can I say? I didn't do it. Nobody came to be witnesses for me. My workers are all against me. They're all on the side of the liars. So what's the judge going to believe? Just me? Well, all he knows is Hashem is the boss of the whole world, and even this, what's happening now, Hashem is in every time and every place. And everything happens from Hashem. And he also knows he went to his Rebbe and he told his Rebbe what was happening. And his Rebbe told him to do something to help another Yid who was in trouble. And he did it. So he felt that he did as well as he could what his Rebbe had asked for him. How that's going to help him now, Reb Shmuel doesn't know at all. All he knows is he went to his Rebbe. And another thing, his Rebbe is the Rebbe Maharash. The Rebbe Maharash used to say all the time these words, L'chatchila Riber. L'chatchila Riber means you go over. You have a problem, you don't go into the problem and fight with the problem. You go L'chatchila over the problem. You do something that's higher than the problem. And then Hashem will help you with the problem. What did he do? He did a mitzvah, he helped the Yid. He did something connected with Torah and with Hashem. There was nothing he could do to fight the problem. What's he going to do? Run away? He's going to try to hide? He couldn't fight the problem. Now he's right in the middle of this big problem, but he went above the problem. He went higher than the problem. He did something connected with Hashem. This is the way of his Rebbe, L'chatchila Riber. Go over the problem. Like the Baal Shem Tov used to say, you cannot beat darkness with a stick. What do you do if it's a dark room, you can't see anything, and you want it, it shouldn't be dark? You're going to start screaming at the darkness, hey, I don't want it to be dark, go out. The darkness won't go out. If you pick up a stick and start to hit the darkness, nothing is going to happen to make the darkness go out. You don't want it to be dark. Forget about the dark, the Baal Shem Tov says. You know what you do? You bring in a light. You bring in a candle. You make a light. So you have to do something that's not with the dark at all. You have to somehow get a candle, or you get a light. And if there's a light shining in the room, the darkness can't even be there. You don't have to hit the darkness. You don't have to scream the darkness. You don't even have to pay attention to the darkness. As soon as the light is there, automatically the dark can't even be there. Because light is such a koyach that's higher than dark. And it's so much higher than dark that if it's light, darkness can't even be there. There's no fight between light and darkness. The darkness goes away without a fight. It just can't be there. It disappears. This is also Lechatchila River. If it's dark, you go to the light, and automatically it's not dark anymore. The same thing, the way of the Rebbe Marash. Rebbe Shmuel is in a problem. Somehow the Rebbe Marash gave him a way to go above the problem. And then somehow the problem is not going to be there anymore. What's going to happen now? Listen, Kinalach, very carefully, and you're going to see something that is really Lechatchila River. Rebbe Shmuel got on the chair. He expected the judge to start screaming, as the judges did sometimes, like that. You did this and you did that. What do you have to say for yourself? And he expected the judge just to throw him in the jail, to send him away to Siberia for 25 years or whatever. All of a sudden, Kinalach, a very unexpected thing happened in the courtroom. A thing that never happened before and maybe never happened again. But it happened in the trial of Reb Shmuel. The judge looked at Reb Shmuel. He looked at him for a long time. Then he looked at all the people of the courtroom. And he said, before this man speaks and before I ask him any questions, first I'm going to tell the courtroom a story. What? The people said. The judge is going to tell us a story? They never heard of this before. The judge tells a story in the middle of a trial? Who ever heard of such a thing? But the judge took his big hammer because people started to talk. You know, and he took his big hammer and he clapped the tish. Bang! I want it quiet in this courtroom while I'm telling my story. And nobody should interrupt and nobody should talk. Ooh, people got so afraid of the judge. Okay, the judge starts the story. He says, many years ago, there was a little boy, not so little, but young enough that he had never traveled by himself before. And this was the first time he was traveling by himself. He had visited somebody, a relative from his family, far, far away, on a train. It was the first time he had gone away by himself from home, and now he was traveling back home on the train. He had his suitcases, he was dressed in a beautiful suit, because he was from a very wealthy family, a rich family, and he was going on the train. In those days, sometimes the train trip took a few days and they slept on the train, and sometimes they would have to change trains, they would have to take off their luggage, their suitcases, and they have to go to another train, and sometimes they have to change a few times, until finally they got all the way home from a long trip. Well, this train pulled into a station, and they announced on the train, everybody off, take your suitcases, in an hour there's going to be another train, take all of your things off of this train, and in an hour you will go on another train, and you will continue on your trip. Well, the boy took off his suitcases and everybody else took off their things, and they put it on the platform, on the place over there by the trains, and now people are waiting for the other train to come in an hour. People started looking around. Hey, look, there's a store. Ooh, there's a restaurant. Oh, there's some shopping over there. There's a nice place to go for a walk over there. Oh, it's a nice place over here, the station. And some people said, oh, you know, we'll go over there for an hour and walk around and, you know, do some shopping and maybe go to the restaurant and buy some things for ourselves. Why should we just stand around here for an hour? And the little boy looked around also. He says, oh, looks like a nice place to go. I'll have a good time. There's even a place, there's toys over there. I'm interested to go, but I can't schlep all of my bags and all of my things with me. I can't take everything with me. What'll I do? And there was a man over there. And the boy walked over to the man. Excuse me, could you please watch my things? I'd like to go over to the store and to the place over there and look. The man said, okay, I'll watch your things, but make sure you come back in time, because remember, the trains are very, very on time here, and we don't want you to miss your train. And I don't want to have to wait here for you, and you're going to miss the train, and I'll miss the train also. Make sure you're back in time, remember. Oh, yeah, I'll be back in time, mister. Sure, I'll be back in time. Don't worry about it. And the little boy goes over there, and he's looking in the windows, and he goes inside of his store, and he buys a little something to eat. He had a little money on him, and the rest of his money was in one of his bags by his suitcases. Well, the little boy didn't have a watch, if there were watches in those days, and probably there weren't even watches in those days. And maybe he didn't know how to tell time, or maybe there wasn't a clock. And he was sort of, looking too long at the stores and not thinking too much. All of a sudden he remembered, I wonder if it's an hour yet. I hope I'm not late for my train. He took a look around and he ran back to the place where he was supposed to be for the train. And as soon as he got there, there was nobody there and there were no suitcases, nothing was there. Oh no! I missed my train. Oh no, all of my things are gone. They must have put her on the train. And now I'm not on the train, I'm here. How am I going to get home? What will I do? I don't have anything. I don't have my money. I don't have any clothes. And I'm in a strange place. I don't even know where I am. Some train station somewhere. I'm far away from my house. I'm far away from my mommy and my daddy. I don't know what to do. Well, this little boy was stuck by himself in a strange, faraway place, in a train station. What did he do? He wandered around. He was too shy to go and talk to people or to explain to people. Okay, the man, he asked him to watch his bags because he was a man that was on the train. But all these strangers that weren't on his train that he never saw before, he just was afraid to walk up to them to speak to them. He was very shy. And he just walked around. He didn't have any money. He didn't have any food. He didn't have any place to go. And people were coming and going to trains, and trains were stopping, and people were unloading. And people walked right by the little boy, and he just walked around or sat down on a bench until it got to be the nighttime. What should he do? Where should he sleep? He's not in his uncle's house, and he's not in his parents' house. And he's not used to being by himself. He slept on a bench in the train station all by himself. He woke up in the morning and was hungry. He had no money, he had no food. He went through the day hungry and he didn't have anything to eat. And again, people walk right by, nobody pays attention. The next night he again slept on a bench in the train station. This went on for 3 days until the boy was starving and he felt dizzy and so weak and he felt so terrible. And he just wandered around the train station until all of a sudden, now remember, the judge is telling this story to the courtroom at Reb Shmuel's trial. And nobody knows why the judge is telling this. Until the judge says, on the third day, this boy was about ready to pass out and fall on the ground. When all of a sudden, a man got out of a train together with all the other people, and everybody was rushing with their suitcases, and the man stopped, and he looked at the boy, and he came over to the boy. This was the first person that took any interest to come over to the boy. And right away the man said to the boy, little boy, it looks like something is wrong. It looks like you're upset. it looks like you're weak, you're pale, your face is very white, you don't look well. Is everything okay? Is there some way I can help you? Is something wrong? Can I do something for you? The little boy started to cry. And he told the man the whole problem. He told him the whole thing that's been going on for 3 days, and then he's a lost little boy, and he's far away from his home. The little boy told the man how he had been far away at his uncle, and he was traveling home, and the train left without him, and all of his stuff was gone, and for 3 days and three nights he's been wandering around, and he hasn't eaten, and he's been sleeping on a bench, and he doesn't know what to do, and he has no money. Right away the man took the little boy to the restaurant, and he bought him a big meal, a delicious meal. And he made sure that he ate and drank enough, and he felt good. And then the man took the little boy, and he bought him a ticket back to his home. And then he took the boy, and he bought him a bag of nash, that he should have what to eat on the way home. And he gave the boy money that he should have what to spend in case he has to have money when he goes home to spend on the way. And he asked the boy if there's anything else he needs. And the boy says, no, thank you very much. And the judge says, by the way, this happens to be, the man that this happened to be had a beard, he had a hat, he was a Jewish man, he had those strings coming out from his pants, under his hat he had, you know, a yarmulke. This was the man that stopped for this boy. And this boy was not Jewish. This is a non-Jewish boy. And the man asked the little boy, after he took him and gave him all those things and fed him and brought him the ticket and gave him the money, he asked the boy if there's anything else he needs. And the boy said, no, only one thing he needs. I need your name and your address where you live. Please write it down. My parents are very wealthy. Money is not a problem. And they'll pay you back for everything that you gave to me, the food and the ticket. You spent your money on me. They'll pay you back gladly. Just please tell me where you live so they'll send it to you when I get home, because I'm going to tell them everything you did for me. And this man shook his head. He says, no. And he was smiling. It was my pleasure. I'm glad that I could help you. Because our Torah says it's a mitzvah to help anybody that's in trouble. And I'm glad that I could help you. And the little boy says, isn't there anything we can do back for you? And the man says, yes, there is, but not money. I'm going to ask you and your parents for one favor. And that is, he says, I'm Jewish. If you ever have a chance, if you or your mommy or your daddy or your family, if you ever have a chance to help a Jew who's in trouble, if you do that, that's going to be the way that you pay back everything that I did for you. Just do me that favor, help a Jew back, and that's going to be the way you pay me back. Otherwise, it's my pleasure that I was able to help you, and I wish you well. And this little boy took his ticket, and he got back, he got on the next train, and he went home. And the judge says to the courtroom, you're all wondering why I'm telling you this story. You're wondering why. Why should I tell you this story? And now I'm going to tell you why. This little boy, many years, was me, the judge says. And I'm going to tell you something else. All of those years, I always remembered what happened when I was a little boy. And I always remembered the face of the nice Jewish man that helped me out of my trouble. And who saved me, and maybe even saved my life, when nobody else took an interest, and this was the only man. And he didn't even ask for any money back. He was only doing it because that was the right thing to do. And I always remembered that man, and I always had a secret wish. I wished that someday in my life I would be able to meet that man again and to say thank you, because now that I'm older, I really appreciate what he did for me. Then I was a little boy, I really didn't appreciate, even though I did appreciate it, but I really didn't understand what a special thing this man did to give up from his own time and his own money and to do something without expecting to get back. Now I really understand and appreciate more what he did. My secret wish was, I always wished that I would someday be able to meet this man to say thank you and do some favor back. And today, my wish has come true. And the courtroom started talking about it. And the judge took his big hammer and he clocked it on the table. Bang! You're probably wondering why today my wish came true. And I'm going to tell you why my wish came true. Because the face of the man I never forgot. And I never saw him again until today. And today I saw him now for the first time in all those years. And he's sitting right here in front of everyone in the courtroom. And he pointed to Reb Shmuel. This is the man that helped me from my trouble many years ago. Kinelach, people's mouths were open wide. Their eyes were popping out of their heads. They couldn't believe it. And when the workers who were the liars realized what was happening to them, they got scared. And then the judge said to the courtroom, any man that did such a favor and was so good-hearted without expecting money in return, for sure is not a criminal, he's not a liar and a cheater, and he's not somebody who did this whole thing of stealing and asking workers to steal and threatening them that he was going to fire them from their jobs and leave their families hanging out without any money on a limb. He's not a man that would make people to lose their jobs and leave their families without money. And so therefore, I am going to call back the two workers that said that this Reb Shmuel made them steal, and I'm going to ask them more questions before I decide on the punishment and who is to get punished. And the two workers started to shake, and they started to get scared. And their faces turned red. And now this time, they came back to the witness stand, they came back to the front, and the judge got up, and he was walking back and forth in front of them. He came down from his high place, and he starts asking them questions left and right, and he's asking them all kinds of questions, how this and what that and when this, and he completely tore them apart until they started making all kinds of answers. You could see they were liars. They didn't know what they were talking about, and the whole thing that they were saying before was full of baloney, and you saw that they were liars and cheaters, and they made up the whole thing. And he called back the other workers that tried to help these workers, and he showed that they were also liars and cheaters, and they were just trying to cover up for their friends and make a whole maise. And finally, the judge, after he got done with all the witnesses and all the workers, he got back up on his high place and sat back in his chair, and he took out his big hammer, and for the last time he smashed it on the table, and he said, all of the workers who are the liars and the cheaters are going to be sent to Siberia for 25 years. And Reb Shmuel goes home back to his family, and everyone should know he's a good man, and the ones who were not good get punished, and the one who's good goes home. And Kinelach, that is the end of the Maisa. One time in a town, a man got very, very sick. They went to the doctor. The doctor couldn't help because he came and he saw that the man was so sick. It was a very special, terrible sickness that the doctor couldn't help. And they brought, with a big emergency, they brought a different doctor, a big doctor from the city. He came with special medicines and special needles and special all kinds of special things, and the doctor could not do anything to help the man. It was a Yiddish man, and the Yidden ran to a great tzaddik who was in that city, and they told the tzaddik, "We went to the doctors, we tried everything, but a man is very sick. Please, Rebbe, give a bracha to the man. Please tell us what we should do." And the tzaddik said, "Give the man hot, strong, black coffee." The tzaddik said, "Give the man strong, hot, black coffee to drink." And they ran to the house, and the doctors were still there. And they went into the kitchen, they put up the chinik, and they get out coffee. And the doctor's saying, "What are you doing? This man is dying, and you're going to have coffee now?" "No, no, no. The tzaddik said we should give to the sick man strong, hot, black coffee to drink." The doctor scratched the head. "What? This is the worst kind of a thing that could ever be. What are you doing? That's what the tzaddik said. We're going to listen to him. They made the coffee, and they gave it to the man. They put some in his mouth that he should drink it. Sure enough, within a few minutes, he was completely cured. He got up and he was out of bed and he was fine. And the doctors, their eyes were popping out of their heads. They couldn't believe it. How strong black coffee could make a person that sick better. But they saw themselves that he was better. A few weeks later, a different man got sick in the city. And also the doctors came and they gave their medicines and their needles and nothing could save the man. And the people knew that this was the same sickness that the other man who got cured by the strong black coffee, this is the same thing that he had. And this time they did not even run to the tzaddik. They made strong hot black coffee and they gave it to the man. They opened his mouth, they poured some in, and he got worse, and he almost died. And the doctor said, "See, this is the worst kind of a thing for a sick person. Why did you do such a thing?" Well, they ran to the tzaddik, and they told the tzaddik now, they said, "This man, this certain man, he's very, very sick. The doctors say he's chas v'shalom going to die, and nothing can save him. And we tried to save him, we couldn't do anything." The tzaddik says, "What do you mean you tried to save him? What did you do for him?" "Well, we gave him hot, strong black coffee like to the other man." The tzaddik said, "What? You gave him that? That's the worst possible thing that you can give to a person like that." And the people didn't understand. They said to the tzaddik, "So what should we give him?" So he said, "Okay, go back home and give him a cup of hot, strong black coffee." They ran home. They made strong, hot, black coffee. They gave it to the man. And this time he had a complete refuah shleima. He was fine. But they couldn't understand. They gave it to him before. And now they gave him the same thing. The first time, it almost killed him. This time it healed him. How could it be? And the tzaddik explained when they went back, it's not that the coffee by itself has the power this way or that way. It's Hashem's bracha. It's the koyach of Hashem. The koyach of Hashem can be inside of the coffee or not. There were times that six people went to a tzaddik after medicines didn't work and after doctors didn't help, and the tzaddik gave them bread and butter. They ate the bread and butter and they got healed because the bread and butter was a keli for a bracha. The bracha was inside of that. The bracha could be inside of something else.